Hi, my name is Deanna, recovering from depression. And I was thinking about what I would say, and I'm going to try to follow the typical format. It's like what it was like, what happened, and then where I am now. When I was growing up, I want to talk about kind of like the evolution of my depression. When I was growing up, I grew up in a white neighborhood, and my mother, and this was a time where racism was really very blatant. There were no Black people or people of color on television. There were no heroes who were people of color. So that's kind of like the backdrop for this, so that you can kind of understand how that developed. Now, when I was growing up, I had friends who were white, and they were all, none of them really even, I don't even think they ever thought about race, because we were just friends. We were just kids and we were just friends. That's like the normal way of being. However, my mother, because of, I guess, her early scarring, was very obsessed with race. And so she pointed out to me that my kinky slash curly hair and my what's the other thing, and my color were gonna, you know, I would never be wanted. Everybody looked down on me. And this was, I mean, it'd be one thing if she just said it once, but this was kind of a repetition, and it was a compulsive need to put her own bad feelings onto me, which she did very successfully, I must say. And you know, none of this stuff I don't think is conscious, but it is received consciously when you're a kid. So early on, I already felt ashamed about my color and my hair, thinking that it was some kind of hideous parts of me that would never be acceptable. And that was not contradicted by the society around me. Somebody is unmuted. Where was I? So in this environment, what my mother said felt true to me, because I looked around and nobody was of my color who was in the movies. Nobody was of my color in the many, 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 many books I read. And I wanted them to, or either that, or I wanted to be them. I wanted to be white so that I could skip over this problem, you know, of the way I looked. So this was my thinking as a child. And what happened was that over time, I kind of was like fighting my mother for her vision of reality versus mine. And so I was trying to prove to her that she was wrong. However, society at large constantly proved her right, unfortunately. So for me, it was a reality that my hair and my color were going to keep me out of life forever. And that, you know, I'd have to find some corner of the world to exist in. So if they would have me. So anyway, moving on. So how this relates to depression is that, one, I was isolated. There was really no one I could talk to about this who could help me to understand what was happening or why this was happening, or what it meant, or that it was a lie. There was nobody like that. Society, as I said, reinforced it. So there was nothing in society that told me otherwise. So this was a very strong belief in my life. As I got older, I lived out this belief in my relationships, and especially in my romantic relationships. I would automatically feel inferior, and I would be in a state of terror pretty much, that, you know, I just was not good enough to hold on to by whoever I was with, especially if I was, you know, interested or wanted this person, then of course I wouldn't want them to reject me. But what happened because of the belief system I had, I walked out of my childhood with that belief system intact. And so, even though, I saw it many ways to kind of like believe differently, I didn't want to believe this. However, I couldn't not believe it. And so this was my, I think that beliefs have a very powerful effect in depression. So what happened because of that belief system is that I lived it out over and over and over again. And that's the power of belief systems, is that because I believed this, I acted like a person that my mother had described. Or I felt like that person, even if I didn't act like that. It was disaster after disaster after disaster because of that. However, again, nobody is 100% anything. And in many ways, I did find it. And if I felt somebody was racist, I would, prove them wrong, which a lot of times I could. Especially in terms of intellect and school. So that was a part of me that I kind of used as a means of fighting back, I guess. And also in the 60s, there were a lot of liberation movements, and the Black Liberation Movement was one of those things. And so I really got heavily involved in that. And that helped me significantly to at least feel I belonged with Black people and people of color. So that was like, yay, I belong with people that didn't think I was weird, strange, or unacceptable. And not only that, but they were countering that with their own belief system. So I continued. I think that the childhood beliefs are very deeply rooted. I don't think that just because intellectually or on some level, I countered these things, I think they ran me from a deeply emotional place. And so they distorted my life and my relationships, but especially my feelings about myself. Failure after failure after failure. And I'm not talking about I was able to get a job, it didn't affect me in that sense. What it affected me was in connecting with other people. No one is 100%, so I had my friendships, et cetera, et cetera. But in certain areas, especially romantic, it was a freak out from the second, And not only that, but my own ongoing self-talk was so hateful. So after a while, or really early on, I started to, I used addictions to hide, to numb myself. But after failure, after failure, after failure, something happened inside of me that made me not want to try anymore. And that happened gradually. It didn't happen like overnight. There were always parts of me that were fighting on, but there was a deeper part of me that didn't want to fight and that was tired. And because I felt like every time I fought, I got defeated. And again, that's the power of beliefs to distort your perception of life also. So with that belief system and the, apparent proof of it, of it being true, I withdrew more, or I withdrew into addictions, which made me look social, but really I was not present in a really big way. So over time, these depressions would just kind of take over, and I had no sense of where the depression was coming from. I really didn't. I would suddenly just feel like, this need to retreat and retreat and retreat until it became a physical state of being, meaning that I would go into a depression that was physical And then I couldn't pull myself out of it even when I tried. So this was a cycle that repeated itself throughout my life until, you know, and continues today. The difference, though, is that, you know, so I've sought every kind of recovery, every kind of therapy, every kind of you name it. You know, if you were me, you would have gotten depressed, too. But well, actually, it was the wrong one to say that. But so what, you know, after all these efforts, I was starting to recover in other programs and I was starting to get better in many ways. But periodically, my depression would defeat me yet again. And sometimes I think the depression comes up more so to not step out of the belief system, to not try to move past it, because it's just, it's kind of like become the status quo. So I desperately was looking for a room where people talked about depression or 12, because I do believe in the 12 steps. So I felt like the 12 steps, there had to be one for depression. I mean, you know, there's got to be a bunch of us that are depressed. And so I found Depressed Anonymous. And the minute I found Depressed Anonymous, something did lift. And what lifted really was the isolation, because this was a part, this was probably the deepest part of me that I could not share about. And I had a lot of shame about. And for the most part, people did not identify with. When I talked to people that hadn't experienced depression, they would give me sort of like the typical, well, you're depressed, do this, do that, do this, you know, and that would depress me more because I knew that that was not the answer. But when I got to Depressed Anonymous, people began to talk about what was really at the heart of the matter. And that finally made me feel that I was with people that would really help me to reach this part of myself and heal this part of myself and accept this part of myself. And one of the things in Depressed Anonymous, that's really the main thing that has helped me about Depressed Anonymous. But the other thing is really starting to learn about how I sadden myself, you know, my addiction to depression, because out of habit and then just out of almost like an automatic cycle, it's become an addiction in the sense that I cannot get out of it once I'm in it. And I don't know how I get in it, so I'm powerless over it. And so I started to look at and learn about how I sadden myself. And this could be really, for me, I think it's a projection into life of my failure, of how scary life is and how I'll be rejected, of how everything I've done up till now has failed. So these are all beliefs. And they're all things I say to myself. I mean, I don't say it directly, but I say it in all kinds of ways and through my behavior. And so as I learn, I become more aware of how I project failure and how that affects me. And I start to behave differently because I know that it's a false belief and that there is a way to turn it around. Even though it may not be easy, but if you do it habitually and constantly and you get a lot of support for it, more and more you will dwell in the, you know, dwell in the land of sanity, you know, at least for myself, you know, in an approach to life that will at least point me in the direction of self-acceptance and success in my own eyes, in my own view. And people are always a part of it, but isolation is a huge part of my depression. When I begin to feel insecure or something, and I a lot of times it just kind of creeps up on me. And then by the time I'm in it, I just like I'm already in it and I can't get out of it because it's dominating. But going to meetings breaks that up. So I have not gotten, since I've been in Depressed Anonymous, I have not had a severe depression the way I used to have them. I don't get stuck in depression. I keep going. Like right now I'm depressed because I have a lot of fears and I'm trying to suffocate them and it's causing me to withdraw. So I know that, so I continue to go to meetings. I continue to share. I continue to, like they say in the other program, I continue to show up. And this will prevent me from becoming seriously depressed the way I used to. 15A?
Yeah, doing great.
Thank you. I'm almost wrapping up. So anyway, so through this and through going to meetings, really every day for the most part, I go to a DA meeting. I've noticed that if I indulge in any kind of addiction, which is for me or an avoidance of reality, it begins to feed that withdrawal, and that begins to feed isolation, and that begins to feed my not wanting to participate in my life, which equals depression. And that has many, many levels to it. But because I continue to do this on a regular basis, I see faces that accept depression, understand it, and realize that it really is a struggle to recover, or challenge, as they say nowadays, then I can keep going. You know, and my strength can give other people strength, and their strength can give me strength, and, you know, and God can give us all strength, and we continue to move forward. And that has happened in my life. It's not like a speedy type of thing. Like, I haven't arrived, and I don't know that I ever will, but it's definitely given me a reason and a purpose to continue to work towards what it is that I want, and to succeed more, which when I succeed more, it actually creates hope, which makes me actually begin to embrace life. So, and I thank DA for that, because that DA was a missing piece for me. So with that, I pass. Thank you.